The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to our new podcast, The Signal
and the Noise,
that will attempt to give you a peek into the inner workings of Mint's long stories. This is Sunit.
And I am Ajay.
And we are both editors with Mint.
Welcome to this pre-US elections podcast. My colleague Ajay will not make it for this episode, but worry not. We have an erudite diplomat as a guest today. There's a week to go to the US election, one that is arguably the most important one in a long, long time. Today, the outgoing US administration landed in Delhi. US Secretaries of State and Defense Mike Pompeo and Mark Esper came here to seal a military alliance with India. The common enemy is, of course, China. Helping us unpack the geopolitical stakes is veteran Indian diplomat Talmeez Ahmed. He was a former Indian ambassador to Saudi Arabia, Oman and the UAE, and is one of the foremost Indian experts on West Asia. Of course, like any good diplomat, Ambassador Talmeez Ahmed's remit spreads far and wide, so he's just the right person to discuss the world at large. Let's find out. Hi, Ambassador Talmeez Ahmed. Good to have you on board on The Signal and the Noise.
Thank you very much.
So, given that we're just a week away from the US elections, I need you to put on the soothsayer's hat. What does your gut say? How are things going to turn out?
I think there is going to be a major change in the United States. According to all indications, there will be a change of president. And this change will portend very significant changes, not only within the United States, but also in many parts of the world. Donald Trump has been a major disruptive presence. He has not brought substance and gravitas to his position, has been extraordinarily irresponsible both at home and abroad. I think a voice of sanity, of balance, and possibly of wisdom can be anticipated in the White House today.
What would the potential impact be on India from a Biden administration?
I think we have some way to go in that regard. The first responsibility of the Biden administration will be domestic. They have to handle the pandemic. It has gone completely out of control. Thousands of people have died whose deaths should have been prevented by a more responsible administration. So he will have to address this. And in all his remarks, he has focused on this. Linked with this is the US economy. It is in desperate condition. It really needs a fresh hand and a fresh mind. And then there is this healing touch that is required in this polarized country. People are very far apart from each other. Lots of people have very deep grievances with each other. There are racial issues, there are racism-related issues, gender-related issues, and also issues relating to the white community, sections of which feel that they are marginalized in their own country. So I think his principal agenda will be domestic. With regard to foreign policy, his priority will be re-sowing the relationship with the allies. Trump had gone out of his way to really alienate large sections of them. I think Biden will also give a certain degree of attention to again getting back into the international institution that Trump had so callously put out of the way. And then there are issues relating to China and to Iran. As far as India is concerned, I think there is bipartisan support for good ties with India, but I'm not sure this is going to be a major priority as far as Biden is concerned. There are far too many other more urgent issues on his plate.
Okay, so India's obviously way down the pecking order, but today's security pact between the US and India, and it's an outgoing US administration, obviously indicates something, that the embrace between the two countries is fairly strong. In one of your recent long stories from Mint, you had argued that India's interests are better served by the Russia-China alliance. So obviously you don't agree with this embrace, India's embrace with the US. How would you describe this now?
I'm very deeply concerned about the way in which we are handling our foreign policy in general and our immediate response to the China challenge in particular. I'm very concerned that there has been a panicky response to the Ladakh standoff. Exactly what we had done in 1962 is being repeated 58 years later. Suddenly, the nation seems to have lost its self-confidence and doesn't know what to do. And in this moment of national crisis, it desperately turns to the Americans, despite the fact that the Americans do not share our agenda, do not share our view, do not share our vision, and indeed have a long record of letting their allies down. The United States, at the end of the day, is a superpower. It has global responsibilities, and it acts as it should in its own interest. To the extent India's interests coincide with theirs, they will give a certain degree of attention to us. But I don't believe that there is any prospect of a strategic partnership between India and the United States. What India has, what the Americans have done, is to co-opt India through the Quad into their agenda relating to the West Pacific, to the East China Sea and the South China Sea. This is not our area of concern. For us, the Indian Ocean begins from the Malacca Strait and goes up to the Strait of Hormuz and beyond into the Gulf and up to the Suez Canal. This is our oceanic maritime space. What the Americans have done has pulled us out of this because that is their area of concern and priority. They want to also engage us in Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia is a very important area for us, but it does not pose security concerns for us. It is a matter that has to be addressed between those countries and China, with the United States possibly as a mediator, not India. India's principal concerns remain in Eurasia, what I would call Eurasia. It is the land area that is to our north. We have China, we have Russia, and we have issues relating to Pakistan. These are our priority areas, but we have got ourselves dragged into something which is not a matter of concern for us. That is why I deeply regret this panicky response that I see with regard to rushing to the American embrace without taking into consideration what should be our concerns and our priorities.
Right. One obvious commonality between the US and India at this stage, a common interest, is China, obviously. Will this anti-China sentiment persist post the US elections? And obviously, how do you also view it within India?
I should point out to you straight away that the narrative relating to the Ladakh standoff is still shrouded in mystery. Many of our so-called experts have rushed into print and onto our television screens to scream their guts out about the betrayal. None of them had mentioned any of these prospects earlier. They have spent 30 to 35 years, 40 years dealing with China, learning their language. All of them are screaming from the rooftop about the need to build ties with the Americans. Now, with regard to China, the narrative, as I said, is wide open. Why did the Chinese feel the need for this confrontation with India in Ladakh? What was the timing? What were the factors that they took into account with regard to the timing? We do not know. There are a wide variety of explanations, but none of them is seriously convincing. Some of them speak of President Xi Jinping's domestic compulsions. Some of them speak about his desire to project a great power authority within the region. I am not yet convinced about this. Therefore, let me say straight away that we do not know. Now, very wisely, on the positive side, our political leadership, our diplomats, and our military commanders have chosen to be extremely cautious in their public pronouncements. They have not allowed sentiment to shroud their good sense. Where you find jingoism, really, strident jingoism, is really in our media. Large sections of our media, possibly briefed by certain people behind the scenes, have been screaming from the rooftop about this confrontation with China and the need to rush to the American embrace. Large sections of these people also belong to the traditional pro-American lobby who have been in our country for several years and have been pushing precisely this agenda that you must go to the Americans if you need to be secure. I dispute this fundamentally. I believe this is not the way to go forward. What is likely to happen? I think that, yes, there will be a certain understanding with regard to the border issue. And I think it will take some time. Both countries seem to be ready for a long, cold winter. We seem to be geared for this. We have beefed up our facilities at the border on both sides, and both in terms of firepower as well as in terms of housing and other facilities. So I think it will be a long, cold winter. The effort is on both sides to ensure there is no further escalation. On the economic side, we seem to have taken certain initiatives, and we have also curtailed our imports from China. And to some extent, there is a better balance of trade between our two countries. But the relationship is so substantial in the economic field that I'm not sure it's going to reach, that it's going to get any worse. We need each other's markets, and I believe that is finally going to happen. With regard to the diplomatic side, there is a certain caution. Because we have not understood the narrative completely, possibly it is better known in the South Bloc as well as in the Chinese Foreign Office. It's not yet in the public domain. But my own sense is, and this is a personal view, that certain initiatives taken in India could have alarmed the Chinese. I think I would mention in this regard the abrogation of Article 370 and the triumphant noises that emerged from very responsible quarters about how we would liberate all the occupied area, and we also issued maps in this regard. Secondly, I believe that some of the remarks that were made with regard to our neighbors in connection with citizenship for minorities, I think also alienated us from our neighbors and gave China an opportunity to show that India was incapable of doing any of the things that it was proclaiming. But above all, the most important factor that might have weighed with the Chinese is this business of developing ties with the Americans so overtly and so robustly, particularly the Quad. The Quad is overtly an anti-China coalition. It serves no Indian purpose that I can see. And I believe the Chinese felt that India should be reminded about its geography. So what we are witnessing in Ladakh, I suspect, is a geography lesson. That while you may fool around in Southeast Asia and cross the Malacca Strait into South China Sea, your real concerns remain at the border. We share with China a border of 4,000 kilometers. This border has not been demarcated. It is only an oral gentleman's agreement that has ensured peace at the border. But if India continues to be aggressive in its posture by going along with the American agenda, then I believe certain sections in the Chinese Foreign Office and other councils would have encouraged their president to go in for this confrontation. I don't believe it will escalate. I feel it has served its purpose, and I feel that this is a time that over a period of time, absent jingoism, absent this shortcut into the American embrace, I think that there will be a degree of understanding and good sense, possibly sometime early next year, hopefully, and we will be able to move forward at sensible countries as we should. These are our concerns. These are our priorities.
Right. I guess one clear indicator of that would be if the trade and tech wars start abating and that things move to normalcy, what you seem to indicate also. Okay, so absolutely. Finally, I'm going to ask you how the embrace with the US will impact India's relations in West Asia.
There is no direct link that I can see just yet. West Asia is of great importance to India in terms of our energy and economic security, our connectivity projects through Chabahar in Iran, as well as the presence of our community. But after an initial outburst of enthusiasm from the Prime Minister in reaching out to West Asia, we seem to have sort of given up. The last year and a half has been a period of near total absence of interest in foreign affairs. What we really need to do is to ensure that our domestic priorities and our foreign policy priorities are given equal attention. That is the sign of a great power. That a great power just does not follow a domestic agenda based on ideology that is divisive, but has an approach that fosters national unity along with also a foreign policy vision. I am going to argue to you that we really need a new strategic culture. We need an approach to foreign affairs that is founded on a vision, that has got a strategy, that is not short-term but long-term, that is not reactive but proactive, and that truly we build the resources in order to go forward in this regard. A strategic culture of this kind is missing. I should remind you straight away that while India has been hibernating and focusing on reinventing the idea of India, others have been pretty proactive. I want to mention to you how Russia and China are robustly working together to shape Eurasia at the heart of a new world order. I'm not speaking in exaggerated terms. I truly believe that a new world order is being shaped during the pandemic right in front of our eyes, that China and Russia have, in the face of extreme hostility from the United States, have come strongly together. They have married together the two ideas of the Eurasian Economic Union and the Belt and Road Initiative, and are now shaping a greater Eurasian partnership. They have reached out to Iran. They are going to co-opt Afghanistan and Pakistan, and I possibly believe Turkey as well. So a new geopolitical scenario is taking shape at our border, and India is not part of it at all. The Quad is not going to help us in this regard. We need to work with Russia and China. We need to be closely involved with the Iranians. We need to address serious issues at our border with both China and Pakistan. None of this is happening as of now, and I believe that should be our priority.
That's fascinating, Ambassador Ahmed. And your views, contrarian that they are from the prevailing narrative, add great value. Oh, and those listening to this podcast, I hope this new format has helped you figure out the big story of our times. Do send us feedback. And as always, stay healthy, eat healthy. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Sunit.
You have been listening to The Signal and the Noise, with me being the signal, of course. We would love to hear from you. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram on @HTSmartcast. Or you can also reach out to us personally
at Sunit Arora
and @AJAxiom. To listen to more such interesting podcasts, do log on to htsmartcast.com. We'll be back next week with a new story and some awesome banter.
And lots of fun.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.